thanks, Ralph, for being here. Don't mean to keep you. We'll say goodbye on air, live.
That's great. Thank you.
We are live as live can be in Radio Catskill Studios. And I'm Jason Dole. This is the Local Edition. Thank you for being here with me tonight. I'm your host, but not for long. I'm about to hand things over to Bill Williams for the Kingfisher Project for this month. Bill, you're going to be on the tape in just a moment introducing it, but the big picture about this conversation we're about to have, this is about wholly, or at the time you recorded the interview, wholly unregulated substances that people are able to actually find in local stores, correct?
Yes, yes. There's always something. The thing that's most interesting about it is it repeats a pattern of what happens when a substance appears. It starts with a plant, moves to something more concentrated, then becomes a synthetic. And the weight of people, lobbyists, and money behind it all promoting it is scary.
Right. So this is a little different than maybe the typical conversation you have on the Kingfisher Project, but that does just speak to the wide range of subjects that you're able to cover.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is this is something that's right in our neighborhood that we need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a product that now becomes as strong as any other opioid and addictive.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get into the Kingfisher Project for tonight really quickly so that you can hear it. But just remember, we are live. Bill and I are actually here, and we'll be looking for your support even as we get into the interview. Thank you so much for being here, Bill.
Thank you, Jason.
Remember, you can donate at WJFFradio.org or call here at 845-482-4141.
Hi, my guest today is Robin Oster. Robin is the Director of Policy for the Partnership to End Addiction. She returns to the Kingfisher Project to discuss Kratom. Welcome back, Robin. Now, I pronounced the word two ways. What do you use?
I usually say Kratom, but I think, you know, I'm no authority on that, so.
Well, I looked it up, and the pronunciation is tomato, tomato, kratom, kratom.
Yep, that makes sense. I've definitely heard it both ways.
And tell me, remind us again, which do you use?
I say kratom usually.
Kratom. Well, we'll try to stay on the kratom train today.
Sounds good.
So tell us just briefly, tell us what kratom is, why we're talking about it.
Yeah, so kratom is originally derived from a Southeast Asian plant. But nowadays it became popular in the US probably over the last 15 years or so. It's often sold in powders. You'll see it, but it can also be in, you know, capsules or tablets or gummies or, you know, liquid little shots. And they're often, these products are often sold at gas stations, convenience stores, smoke shops, places like that, that are widely available and accessible. And they're often marketed as dietary supplements. And the kratom contains a few main like psychoactive compounds. So it's mitragynine and 7-hydroxymitragynine, which I think also we can debate how to pronounce those. Not sure I'm right on those. But those bind to the opioid receptors in the brain. So kratom can cause a very similar response to other opioids, including the potential for addiction. And I think why we're talking about it now is that it's become increasingly popular in recent years. According to the latest National Survey on Drug Use and Health, around 2 million Americans reported using kratom in 2024. And I think it's becoming more available and, you know, frequently unregulated in these really accessible locations, which creates a lot of issues and controversy about how to deal with it.
You're a co-author of a recent article entitled The Rise of Kratom, A Dangerous and Familiar Pattern. Give us a quick overview of the pattern.
Yeah, so the pattern basically is that we're saying we've seen these problems before. Kratom may be a relatively newly popular substance, but we've had plenty of other substances that have been popular in this country, and kratom is following a lot of the similar patterns. So we specifically outline how it's similar to both opioids and to some of the newer psychoactive hemp-derived THC products. So, you know, there's synthetic Delta-9 THC, which is sort of the usual THC found in marijuana, but also variants like Delta-8 and HHC and all of these other varieties. So basically, there are a few reasons and a few ways where we sort of see this overlapping pattern. So first, one commonality is that all of these products are often used to manage health issues. So there's always a reason driving people to use these substances, right? And so we know with opioids and with THC, it's often things like pain. Kratom is very similar. People will use it to manage pain or substance use disorder or other health issues. And it certainly can provide relief to some people, but it definitely poses a big risk to others, including addiction. And that's, you know, common across these substances. And then for all of these substances, there's a really aggressive push by industry to market these drugs and to promote these psychoactive products while minimizing the harms and the risks, especially to young people. So, of course, we saw that with opioids. You know, the opioid companies continued to promote and misrepresent the addiction risk, even after they knew otherwise. THC, similarly, has a well-funded industry that has been, you know, restricting regulations and pushing expansion of the market. And same thing with kratom. There's a really well-funded industry with lobbying power that is, you know, really resisting efforts to regulate the products. And they're often kratom products are often sold as these natural, benign wellness products, which is very similar to how a lot of THC products have been marketed. You know, they're plant-based, and so they're natural, and that really leads to perceptions that these products are safe, while sort of ignoring a lot of the risks. And that's amplified by the fact that they're available in accessible locations, you know, gas stations, convenience stores, and packaged in ways that are very appealing and don't have age restrictions and things like that. And that is another commonality that we're seeing with how kratom has been marketed and how a lot of the THC products are also available in these locations and marketed as, you know, health promoting without highlighting some of the risks. And then one other commonality I'll note that we're seeing is the rise of synthetic derivative products. So with opioids, that would be, you know, the rise of fentanyl and nitazenes and these other products that came after the prescription opioids and heroin and things like that. With THC, it's these hemp-derived and synthetic products, so like Delta-8 that I mentioned before, or synthetic Delta-9 THC, or all of these other varieties that have come beyond just your, you know, original marijuana. And then with kratom, it's 7-OH. So that is a – there is 7-OH naturally occurring in kratom, but a lot of products now are synthetically – making 7-OH or making more potent concentrated 7-OH products. And so across all of these substances, the issue with the synthetic derivatives is that they can often be more potent and they can have other toxic additives. They can increase the risk of adverse consequences. So that is another issue that we're seeing, you know, repeat itself again as a pattern. And finally, I'll just say the one other pattern is sort of a delayed and scattered government response. So, you know, we know with opioids, it took quite a while for the government to respond to widespread prescribing and then illicit opioid use. With the THC products, Congress recently took action to close a loophole that had allowed these products to proliferate, but states had already started to address these products in, you know, scattershot ways, creating sort of a patchwork of regulation. And now with kratom, we're seeing the same thing. You know, it's becoming more of a prevalent issue. There's a growing market and there's starting to be some scattered state responses. Even though the federal government, you know, had originally tried to maybe address it a few years ago, it never went through. And so we're starting to see that pattern again. And so the message of the article is really we're seeing all of these same patterns that we've seen again and again with other substances. We don't need to wait longer to take action on this one. We know what policies can help. And so it's really important to take action now before we get to a level of an opioid crisis or, you know, the widespread THC products or things like that.
In recent discussions, I actually heard a discussion from an assemblyman in New York State about recent laws and restrictions and changes in the law regarding cannabis in the state of New York. The word industry, they talked about, it's the kratom industry, it's the cannabis industry, it's the hemp industry. So the people that grow or create or make these products, the people that market them, the people that advertise them, the people that lobby for them, that word industry has, to me, has a lot of impact, a lot of meaning, and it's frightening.
Yeah, yeah, the industry power behind these things is definitely one of the like warning signs that we're seeing with kratom. You know, whenever you have a commercialized substance, the motives of the people selling it are of course going to be profit driven. That's what companies do, and that's what they're supposed to do. So it gets messy when they're marketing a harmful, addictive substance. Because their motives are not going to be health-driven. They're going to be profit-driven. And that creates a lot of risk for people.
Hi, Bill Williams. You've been listening to me talk to Robin Oster, the Director of Policy for the Partnership to End Addiction. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back talking to Robin.
This is Flora Lichtman, host of Science Friday. On non-Fridays, when I'm just a listener, I have to say I'm impressed. The science reporting is top-notch, and it doesn't stop there. Every day, your station brings you trustworthy coverage of stories that matter, from street construction to the Supreme Court. That's why I listen and why I support them. Please join the thousands of listeners who make all of this possible. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Give now at WJFFradio.org or also donate on the Radio Catskill app.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolan. I'm here with Bill Williams. We are live in the studio because it is our Summer Fun Drive, second day of the Summer Fun Drive. And we are looking for your support, and we're asking for you to make your donation now if you appreciate The Local Edition, if you appreciate the work that Bill Williams puts into the Kingfisher Project, bringing these conversations to us. Boy, it'd be great to hear from you now. Please give us a call.
845-482-4141, or you can donate online, WJFFradio.org. Let's try 845-482-4141. Get that phone ringing.
Okay. And WJFFradio.org and also the Radio Catskill mobile app. Bill, we've only got about a minute or so here more to talk, but what do you want folks to know about the Kingfisher Project if this is their first time stumbling upon it?
I think that they need to know that there's a wealth of information from various sources about drugs and addiction and what we can do, how the stigma around surrounding addiction, the attitudes we bring to it, and what we can do as a community to help improve the lives of those that are addicted and to prevent addiction, to intervene.
You know, in the time that you've been doing this, the time that we've been doing the Kingfisher Project, we got started, you know, about 2014, 2015. And so now that's more than 11 years working on this. I've learned a lot. Concepts like harm reduction, you know, concept. It seemed like a lot of people weren't paying attention to addiction and these issues. And then as more people were paying attention, we learned like maybe some of our preconceived notions aren't exactly the best way to be approaching this. So
absolutely not.
Yeah. The conversations that you have really just like rounded out my perception of of what's going on. And along those lines, it's interesting because your guest is from the Partnership to End Addiction, but their name used to be the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Partnership for Drug-Free America, and then they became Partnership for Drug-Free Kids, and then Partnership to End Addiction.
Yeah, and so it just shows that shifting focus, you know, but it's a good way because it's getting more focused on, like, what is it that we need to work on here as a people? So it's important work. It's important work that you do, Bill, and it's just part of the overall picture of important work that we do here at Radio Catskill. So as we get into the second part of this interview, please remember we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. We made our challenge during the news last hour, which was fabulous, but the challenge to end this fund drive still remains, and your donation now in honor of the Kingfisher Project would be much appreciated.
Keep it up. And now we're going to return to my conversation with Robin Oster of the Partnership to End Addiction. On the way to the station today, on the way to record this interview, I pulled into the nearest gas station, a convenience store near the station, and I didn't see any Kratom. Great. but the energy drinks, the rolling papers, mm-hmm. the smokeless tobacco, not to mention the cigarettes and the beer that are sold. So you can gas up and fill up your own tank at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, we were comparing it to opioids and THC, of course, but yeah, alcohol and tobacco are, you know, the main examples of substances that are, you know, addictive, but they're legal for adults. And so those two substances can also provide some level of example and experience for how to regulate a newer substance like Kratom. But certainly the regulations for those are not perfect either. You know, they're still available and accessible, but there is a bit more regulation around how they can be sold, you know, what can be in them, and all of that stuff. But certainly big industry behind those too, of course. So you still have, you know, the commercialization of any addictive substance is going to come with some challenges for sure.
And that commercialization is aggressive, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, in order to sell things, these companies are going to promote their products. And that's why it's an issue when the product is potentially harmful. And especially with Kratom, there's really not a lot of education out there. Like, a lot of people don't know necessarily that Kratom can be harmful. They see a product that's sold in their gas station that says, you know, this will help you in whatever way. It's a wellness product. It's an herbal supplement. It seems very safe. And people will often think, well, if it's marketed like that and it's sold in my convenience store, it can't possibly be that harmful, right? So I think that's a really big issue on the Kratom side is, you know, it's just being sold like any other product and people don't necessarily know the harms associated with it or the risks that come potentially with taking it.
When you talk about education, and I say this as a former teacher and someone who actually spoke recently about to some high school seniors who are about to graduate and go off to college, and the topic of the evening, I was one of several speakers, but the topic was, what do they need to be watching out for health-wise? How do they need to be taking care of themselves health-wise in college? And one of the things I said was, they'll graduate from college in 4 years or 4 or 5 years, whatever it may be. And by the time they graduate, substances and stuff that we're talking about now may be replaced or augmented by newer things that we don't even know about yet. So how do we, in your role as a policy person, how do we get ahead of the game so that the policies are in place before the product?
Yeah, so I think, you know, part of the, you know, it's horrible to see this pattern repeat, of course, but part of the benefit is we have dealt with this before and we know policies that can help protect young people when addictive substances are legal and available. And so there's, we had put out a report a few years ago creating a framework of legal and regulatory provisions that can be implemented in states that are legalizing marijuana to protect kids. So that's, you know, regulating what the products can contain, the advertising and marketing to make sure that it's not targeting kids, the packaging to make sure it doesn't look like candy, where it can be sold, age restrictions, all those sorts of things. And while we created that framework in the context of a lot of states moving to legalize marijuana, it really can be used for any new substance that's coming on the market. And, you know, the substances may vary, but the basic approach doesn't need to be completely new every time. You know, we can learn from our experiences with alcohol and tobacco and marijuana, and we can implement them for kratom or whatever other substance comes down the road. And so I think that's sort of the one part from the policy angle. But I will also just mention from a prevention angle for young people, a lot of prevention efforts and things that can really help prevent substance use among young people are not substance specific. So a lot of it is, you know, providing mental health supports, making sure that kids develop resilience and life skills, making sure they have a supportive adult in their life, you know, having activities to do and ways to thrive and all of those sorts of things, which really have nothing to do with a specific substance. And if young people are armed with all of those skills and those protective factors, then that can help prevent substance use regardless of what substance is the current one of the day.
A lot of our drug education is essentially a message that says, don't do drugs. They're not healthy for you. Just don't do drugs. It comes down to that, which is fine and useful and important. I would propose that part of our drug education should be getting young people to already think like policymakers, that we need to be charging the next generation with responsibility for coming up with ways to stop us from killing ourselves, like just lemmings running off a cliff.
Yeah, totally. A lot of, you know, sort of scare-based tactics, you know, just say no, those sorts of approaches, we know often don't work. Or don't work for everybody. They may work for some kids, but they're not going to work for a majority of them. And so, yeah, I think kids are smart and they care about each other and themselves. And I think, you know, not being condescending or saying, oh, don't do that. It's bad for you. You know, your brain's not fully developed. You wouldn't understand is sort of not always the most helpful way, but empowering kids to, you know, be the ones to change it, and they can see the downsides of it. And I think empowering them, as you said, is really important. Yeah, I think that is a critical thing. And I think also an argument that can sometimes be powerful is this industry piece that we were talking about, you know, like
yes,
saying that an industry is targeting young people because those are, you know, the customers that they want for lifelong users. And, you know, pointing out the ways that an industry might be trying to appeal to them and maybe not being so forthright with some of the risks or potential harms, I think can also be a persuasive argument for young people.
Where can our listeners go to read your full piece?
Yeah, so that full piece is on Health Affairs Forefront. So you can go to the Health Affairs Forefront website. It was, again, called The Rise of Kratom, A Dangerous and Familiar Pattern. But you can also go to Partnership to End Addiction's social media, whichever of your choice. And we did post it there. So that might be a little easier to find. So Partnership to End Addiction, any social media, you should be able to find the link to that article.
Have we left anything out here?
that pretty much covers it. I think for me, the bottom line policy-wise is just that these products shouldn't be sold as harmful herbal supplements widely available in gas stations and convenience stores without any regulation or oversight. And there is, you know, a few different methods to get at that. But I think that is sort of the bottom line. And so that can be through, you know, scheduling the substance or banning it is one way to do that, but only if kratom is not criminalized and if there is support and treatment available to people who do use it. That's really important. If we're going to do that, we need to do it well. And if it's not scheduled or banned, it's really critical to have these regulatory protections in place, particularly for young people. So those are those like youth protection provisions that I mentioned earlier to, you know, limit some of how the products can be marketed or sold or packaged or things like that. And I think if kratom is to be thought of as or treated as a medication, you know, some people say they use it and it helps them. And so if we're going to pursue it in that way, then it needs to be held to FDA standards for pharmaceutical products, you know, so tested for safety and efficacy and subject to all of the regulations on manufacturing and marketing and, you know, product standards, accurate labeling, disclosure of ingredients, you know, clear dosing information, all of those sorts of things. And any regulations need to be strongly enforced to make sure that, you know, that is what is happening in reality. And so I think that there are, you know, a few ways to approach it, but I think the bottom line is that we know that there are risks associated with these products. So having, you know, no regulation at all and just allowing them to be available and accessible to anyone it presents some risks.
And that is it for tonight's edition of the Kingfisher Project right here on the Local Edition. Big thanks to Bill Williams, as always, for bringing us these conversations. His guest tonight was Robin Oster, Director of Policy at the Partnership to End Addiction. And the partnership is online at drugfree.org. It's drugfree.org. And the full version of this conversation, we had to cut it down just a little for the broadcast tonight. The full version is up, the Kingfisher podcast. Also, you can see the conversation between Bill and Robin. It's up now at Radio Catskill's YouTube page. Go to youtube.com, look for Radio Catskill. Please do subscribe, and when you get a chance, watch our videos, like them, share them. It's a great way to help the station. Again, Kingfisher Project, videos up at youtube.com on Radio Catskill's channel. Look for us on YouTube. And the Kingfisher Project podcast at wjffradio.org, which, by the way, wjffradio.org, that's where you can go to make your donation during our summer fun drive. Please do that now. And support Radio Catskill, support the Local Edition. If you're a regular listener, I thank you so much. If you're one of our regular donors, the people who are sound supporters that sign up and give on a regular basis, I thank you for that as well. And if you have the means, if you have the financial wherewithal to support this public radio station and you have not done that yet, then I encourage you to start doing it, because that's how we get by. Everybody gives what they can. Some folks can't give anything. But it is really important that this radio station is still here for everyone in the community. Please join the community of supporters, the community of listeners who are already enjoying this radio station and then went that extra step to support the radio station to whatever amount they could afford. It's a fantastic group of people. It's been growing and changing over the 37 some years that we've been on air here, 36 years. I'd like you to be part of that radio family, too. Please make your donation at wjffradio.org. It's wjffradio.org. Or donate on the Radio Catskill app. Download our new mobile app if you don't have it already. If you do have it, use it to donate the Radio Catskill app. Coming up at 7, Mr. Kusar Grace is going to be here at the Music Emporium. 2 hours of fantastic music for you. And after that, I think we get into the Ambient Barn with another hour of fantastic music. For now, we got more news on the way from the Daily. And as we get into that, I'm going to leave you with one more request, one more time, to please support this radio station. Give what you can at WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much.